Chapter 18. Stiles wakes up early, a little confused and disoriented. He's sore and feels a little hungover, which he figures is probably a result of the painkillers, as memory trickles back in. Derek's windows face west, so there's hardly any light even through the gaps around the dark green curtains. Stiles yawns a little and stretches. He's always sprawled in his sleep, and now is no exception. He's lying on his back, arms and legs akimbo. There's a heavy weight across his stomach, which turns out to be Derek's arm, and the werewolf's nose and mouth are pressed into the crook of his neck. Although he would love to lay there forever, or possibly roll over and start kissing Derek again, he needs to use the bathroom. He slowly, quietly disentangles himself from Derek's limbs and goes looking for it. The house is dim and quiet. He does his business and then creeps back into the bedroom. There's a faint frown on Derek's face, like he can sense Stiles' absence in his sleep. Stiles slides back into his grip, tucks his forehead against Derek's chin, and closes his eyes. But he doesn't fall back to sleep. He doesn't know exactly what time he had passed out the night before, but it had been early. He'd slept enough. His mind wanders, sifting through some of what he's learned about werewolf packs and families, and comparing it to the common frame of mind. It's a tangle that's going to take some time to unravel, although he thinks he has the salient points firmly set in his mind. Just when he's starting to get bored enough to forego morning cuddles, at least until after he's had his Adderall and can try to lie still for a while, Derek stirs, his stubble rubbing against Stiles' forehead. He makes a little canine noise, grumbly but not unhappy, and settles for another 5 minutes or so before opening his eyes and looking at Stiles. "Morning," he says, a bare mumble. He shifts so he can rub his cheek against Stiles, but then pauses for a moment. "Day 4 is past ideal." "Your stubble doesn't have to be perfect for morning cuddles," Stiles says, rubbing his cheek against Derek's in response. "Oh, good." Derek curls up around Stiles. "Do you have any idea how happy I am?" Stiles considers. "Happy like people on ancient ships hearing the words land ho? Happy like a 4-year-old on Christmas morning? Happy like you're the best thing to ever happen to me. Now stop overanalyzing before your morning caffeine." Derek leans over and kisses Stiles then, slow and soft. Stiles twines a hand through Derek's hair, returning the kiss with enthusiasm. It turns from gentle and calm to something needy and desperate as soon as Stiles' body presses up against Derek, the fabric of his t-shirt sliding against the bare skin of Derek's chest. It doesn't take long for Derek to get on board with this. One of his hands comes around to rest against Stiles' hip, where his t-shirt has ridden up enough to reveal skin. "Oh, Jesus," Stiles says, pushing himself against Derek's body, one arm curling around him so his fingers dig into Derek's back. You are so unfair," says the person who was petting my pecs last night, Derek says as he kisses at Stiles' jaw. "I was on drugs. It's not my fault. And Jesus, you should, like, always be touching me, okay?" Stiles tilts his head back to give Derek a little more room to work. "If you mean like this," Derek says, nuzzling at a spot underneath Stiles' ear. "I'm afraid we'll want to do things like eat someday." "No," Stiles says, one hand tangling in Derek's hair, the other splayed out against the small of his back. "Nope, nope, nope. Staying here, like this, forever. You know, with room for some improvements, like, dude, why are you still wearing clothes? Why do you ever wear clothes?" "Because most of the time without clothes or fur, I'd be cold," Derek informs him, nearly laughing. "Oh my god, I have all the solutions for that. I will keep you warm. That was the best setup line ever," Stiles says happily, wrapping both arms around Derek, rubbing his hands up and down Derek's back and going in for another kiss. "Uh-huh," Derek says, but kissing back eagerly. "What's your plan for food?" "To worry about it later," Stiles says, his hips flexing unconsciously against Derek's, which results in him letting out an involuntary little groan. Oh, what the hell? He stammers, and then does it again with more intent. For a second, Derek enjoys the friction, more than enjoys it, but then he snaps back to himself. Nope. He rolls them over and promptly rolls away. What? Oh my god, what? Stiles says, trying to crawl back on top of him. Nope. Derek sits up. You can't give me your dick until you learn self-defense. Stiles gapes at him for a few moments. You're seriously going to enforce that? You're the worst, he groans. Derek leans forward a little. It's because I love you. He sits back. And it's not like you're the only one miserable. Stiles looks at him for a long moment. I, he declares dramatically, am going to go shower. Naked. All by myself. He gets off the bed and gives a thorough stretch. I'm probably going to do other things in the shower, if you know what I mean. All by myself. Fine, Derek says, raising his eyebrows. And I'll be in here, alone, thinking about you and your dick, in the shower. And how after you've learned self-defense, I can be in the shower with you. He eels out of the sitting position onto his hands and knees, stretching out with his arms straight in front of him, fingers flexing. Jesus fucking... The door to the bathroom slams shut behind Stiles. It's a somewhat more mellow Stiles that emerges from the bathroom about 20 minutes later, cleaned up and dressed in the same clothes he had been wearing the day before. Derek had used one of the other bathrooms to grab a quick shower as well, and is fortunately finished dressing by the time Stiles emerges, given the speculative glance Stiles gives him. Man, I'm starved, Stiles says instead. No one bought anything this morning, so I think we're left scrounging. Which for Derek means cold food like cereals or leftovers that can go in the microwave. God, you guys are so lame. It's seriously not that difficult to make something like French toast or pancakes if you have even basic ingredients, Stiles replies. Maybe we'd have what we need? I will valiantly learn to stir, Derek tells him, wrapping him in a loose hug. Stiles just shakes his head, smiling fondly, and they venture downstairs. It's mid-morning, around 10 o'clock. The children are watching cartoons while Jonathan sits on the sofa in a bathrobe watching them. Laura's folding their laundry. Cora is on the couch next to Jonathan, dressed in a loose tank top and boxer shorts, watching the cartoons but also playing on her phone. Erin is sitting at the table in the kitchen, doing the crossword in the paper. Talia and Peter are nowhere to be seen. Everyone looks up and says good morning when they come in. There's coffee, and Stiles helps himself before looking in the refrigerator. There's bread and eggs and milk, so that's enough for French toast. There aren't enough eggs to make scrambled eggs for everyone, so he'll need to put them on the grocery list he now constantly keeps updated in his phone. He reaches for it, only to remember that his phone is currently in several pieces in evidence bags at the police station, and sighs. Then he looks for an alternate source of protein. There are two packages of sausage in the freezer. He puts them in the microwave to thaw them out. Derek watches Stiles move around the kitchen, knowing that before his mate is done cooking, he's going to wind up waiting in the living room with the others. He can't stand the smell of cooking meat, especially when it's high in fat content. But it's a small price to pay for an actual morning meal. Where's Mom? He asks Erin, wondering if she's made herself scarce for Stiles' benefit or if she had errands to run. She's normally home on the weekends. No matter how busy she is, she always makes time for her family. She said she had a couple things to take care of, Erin says nonchalantly, glancing at Stiles as he starts cracking eggs into a bowl. Derek considers his father, trying to decide if that look at Stiles had been deliberate or not. His father's basic scent is serene. His wife has everything in hand. But Derek knows from experience that that could mean anything from she's gone out to buy more toilet paper to she's planning to have 6 people murdered. It's completely useless when it comes to answering questions. Should I include her in breakfast plans? Stiles asks uncertainly, thumbing through slices of bread. I think she'll be home fairly soon, yes, Erin says. And if not, well, a few extra pieces of French toast won't be left lonely for long. You mean they won't survive for long, Derek amends, setting about making himself a mug of tea. Check the tea population while you're in that cabinet. I'm going shopping tomorrow, Stiles says, then pauses. God, I sound like such a housewife. Because you know how to keep a kitchen organized? God, we're all going to die of some horrible illness when you go away to college. You'll have to teach someone to cook over Skype. Maybe Cora. There's a pause. No, I guess she'll be gone at the same time. Well, Laura's certainly hopeless, Stiles says with a snort. I heard that, Laura calls in from the living room. I know, Stiles calls back. Then he blinks at Derek. Wait, go away to college? Did people do that in PAX? Leave town for school? Derek blinks at him. Yeah, I mean, not everyone does. I didn't. But that doesn't mean you can't. Beacon Hills isn't the entire world. I went to Rutgers in New Jersey, Aaron says, barely looking up from his puzzle. I just thought, with the pack closeness and everything, people wouldn't want to go away, Stiles says. I mean, wouldn't it drive you nuts? Oh, it does, Aaron says. We spend a fortune on travel, coming home every holiday we can manage, or other people coming to visit. Sometimes we'll form temporary loose packs with other wolves in the areas just to have someone close. And if you already have a mate, your mate will often go with you. But at the same time, you know you're gaining new life experience and education and meeting new people. The separation is only temporary. Easy for you to say, Laura says, wandering in with an armful of towels. To Stiles, she adds, Mom went to Columbia, so they were able to live together while they were in college. Jonathan did a semester abroad in Spain, and I thought I was going to go mad. Short trip, Cora remarks from the living room. You're such a snot, Laura calls back. She used to talk to him with her phone plugged in because she talked the battery to death, Derek says. Aaron glances up and adds, and God forbid she use a landline. Since when are we talking about me? Laura asks. She rolls her eyes dramatically and says, Stiles, had you thought at all about college? No, well, Stiles says, there's some schools that the FBI recommends in Minneapolis, and there's one in Georgia, and I don't really want to go to school in Georgia, so... But I'm not 100% sold on criminology anyway, and my dad just went to the University of California in Fresno, so it's not like... I really don't know yet, I guess. You still have time to think it through, right? Derek asks. You're only a sophomore. Yeah, Stiles agrees. But he's thinking about the way he's failing all his classes. He knows his discomfort with the topic shows, because all the wolves get that subtle tension to them when they get the smell of something that they don't like. He tries to ignore them because it's none of their business how he's doing in school, and takes the sausage out of the microwave. And that's my cue, Derek says. He doesn't try to hide it, because his entire family knows he has major issues relating to the fire. So he just kisses Stiles on the forehead and heads into the living room, where the rest of the pack is gathered. Stiles glances after him but doesn't say anything, putting the sausage in the pan and starting the French toast. Laura's collecting dirty dish towels. Aaron is still absorbed in the puzzle, occasionally tossing clues out for Stiles to help with. Stiles feels a lot less awkward around Aaron by now, although he still wants to run away whenever Talia shows up. That's a problem because she arrives about 5 minutes later, while he's waiting for the sausage to finish. That's not terribly surprising. It is her house, after all. But she has Sheriff Stilinski in tow, and Stiles nearly drops the spatula on the floor when he sees him. Dad, he says, startled. Then he lifts both hands and says, My virtue is intact, I swear. Derek thinks I'm some sort of nun or something, for real. From the living room, Derek calls, I'm very aware that you're not a nun. Nuns are women, and I'm absolutely sure you aren't one of those. His voice is somewhat muffled, because he's curled up on the sofa with his head in Cora's lap. Her warm sister scent is covering up the smell of the cooking meat, enough to allow him to stay in the house with a bit of determination. He's trying more than ever now to get over or find a way around some of his hang-ups, because Styles is the den maker, and he doesn't want to always be bolting away from his mate. Sheriff Stilinski just shakes his head. "If you say so," he says. "I'm glad to hear that Derek is respecting you." "He's not," Styles moans. "We would have been to third base already if you were respecting my wishes, and, oh, hi, Mrs. Hale, never mind." He remembers Talia's presence somewhat abruptly and turns back to the stove, face flushing pink. Talia doesn't respond beyond saying, "Why don't we eat on the back porch? It's a lovely day." Derek makes a mental note to go over the werewolf concepts of privacy and propriety with Styles, since they're so very different from the human version. No one really wants to know the details of your sex life, and no one cares if you mention having one, since the whole family knows anyway. So he says, "It's not like I'm denying you forever." He sits up, hugging a well-used throw pillow to his chest, and looks at his mother through the kitchen doorway. "Where were you?" he asks, careful to keep his tone respectful and curious rather than suspicious. "Were you and Sheriff Stilinski out together?" "I went to speak to the sheriff about some concerns I had," Talia says, "given what happened yesterday. He hitched a ride back with me." Styles doesn't look at them, but his entire body vibrates with the effort he's putting into appearing nonchalant. He turns off the stove and starts putting the sausage on a platter. Derek suddenly stands. "I'm going to go set things up outside." He doesn't believe it's anywhere near that simple. He can smell deception in the words, and the warning smell like fresh earth kicked over something hidden on the forest floor. Things that aren't to be disturbed until permission is given. But he didn't think it would be bad. His mother had welcomed Styles into the pack. So he takes the opportunity to leave the house for the fresh air of the porch, and hopes that Styles will come out soon so they could talk for a few minutes. Either luck is with him, or the rest of the pack senses that they need to give them some space right now. Cora ducks out briefly to dump a stack of plates and silverware on the table, but then just as quickly ducks back out. Then Styles shows up, holding two pitchers, one with lemonade and one with iced tea. He glances at Derek, but then his gaze flickers away, saturated with tension. Your dad is finishing up with the French toast while we set the table." Derek puts down the plates he was distributing and rounds the table to Styles, but doesn't touch him. Instead, he holds out his hand in what's becoming a familiar gesture. "Whatever's going on, I didn't know about it." He just stands and waits for permission to touch Styles, to say more, to offer comfort. If there's one thing he's learned, it's not to push Styles too hard when trust is an issue. He doesn't think that Styles accepting his place as Derek's mate will change that. It won't change who Styles is. "Yeah?" Styles says, glancing up at him. He's clearly anxious, but a spark of amusement is in his eyes. "Is this when you admit that you had Cora spying on me at school?" Derek's hand drops and he looks up at the sky. "Jesus fucking Christ, I'm going to tie that girl to a tree." Only slightly louder, he says, "Do you hear that, Cora?" He looks at Styles somewhat warily. "I actually didn't have her spying on you. I told her not to, and I didn't know she'd gone ahead with it until afterwards." Then he looks down, so Styles can only see his eyes a little through the lashes. Quieter, he continues, "Now do you see why I was so angry?" Yeah. Styles folds his arms over his stomach, hugging himself a little. "I should have told you, or Dad, or anybody. I just felt like I was pathetic enough without having to ask someone else to keep bullies from picking on me." Derek moves forward to pull Styles into an embrace. "You weren't pathetic," he says into Styles' hair. "I know that the situation wasn't what you thought it was, and that made things very different from your end. But out of all the words I would use to describe you, pathetic isn't one of them." He takes a moment just to breathe Styles' scent in. "And that wasn't picking on you. Picking on is a bit of name-calling. If I were in your shoes, I would have been trying to make them bleed, or literally calling for my mother." Styles rests his weight against Derek, but won't quite look at him. "Yeah, well, looks like your mother is involved now, whether I like it or not." which is just going to do wonders for her opinion of me, I'm sure." Your father didn't seem angry with her, didn't smell angry with her, and I'm sure he would have been if she had been anything but respectful of you. Your father has never been intimidated by us, and I doubt he'd start now. He hugs Styles a little tighter, and as a species, we respect survivors. Yeah, I know. I just... Styles pulls away, his face pensive but not unhappy. Do you understand a bit better now why I had trouble with believing you? I mean, every fucking day I had to put up with all that bullshit. Everyone just assumed it was a joke, or an excuse, a convenient shield. It never occurred to them that it was anything but, because that made so much more sense to them than the possibility that you would actually want me. Derek nods. Though I don't know why they thought you were such an unlikely choice. I think your school has a bad case of if it's different, it's worthless, and they bring that into the ceremonies. It's like the searching ceremony has gone all wrong somehow. And let me tell you how much Cora didn't like anyone she met on her little mission. I think most of the people around you are just really fucking stupid, he adds. Styles lets out a little snort. Yeah, well, I've been telling them how stupid they are since I was 7. That explains a lot about why they don't like me. I seriously don't even know how you stand them without your head exploding, Derek says. I could barely put up with it for 1 day each year. Before Styles can reply, the door from the inside opens and Laura comes out, carrying a huge tray of French toast. Jonathan is behind her with the sausage and a bottle of syrup in the other hand. The others are trailing after them, with their metaphorical tails practically wagging at the smell of the food. There's some predictable chaos as everyone gets seated and the food is passed around. "Hey, where's Peter?" Styles asks, looking at the empty chair to Talia's left. "He had some things he needed to do today," Talia replies. "We probably won't see him until tomorrow." Derek looks over at his mother and then at Sheriff Stilinski. "Uh-huh," he says. He tries hard to keep the feral grin off his face, because he really isn't sure how much Styles would appreciate that. So he doesn't say anything else, and just starts passing the food around. Before long, everyone's mouths are full, and they're talking about their plans for the barbecue the following weekend, which they have every Memorial Day. Talia's inviting some co-workers and clients, and Jonathan's family is going to be in town, as well as Aaron's brother and his family, so it's sure to be a large gathering. Cora's got plans with friends, and Laura's talking about taking the kids out for a while, so after breakfast, the group starts to break up. Aaron says he'll take care of the dishes and heads inside, leaving only Talia, Derek, Styles, and Sheriff Stilinski sitting at the table. "Well, I should," Styles says, getting to his feet. "Sit down, Styles," Talia says. "We have some things we need to discuss." Styles gets that belligerent scowl on his face, and his father sees his objection coming a mile away and sighs. It seems like Talia and Styles are destined to butt heads, even if they get past their initial disagreements. "There's some paperwork and stuff you need to sign," he says, and Styles reluctantly sinks back into his chair. "Some questions I have to ask," Derek says, holding out his hand again. "Traditional ones." His gaze cuts over to the sheriff, knowing that the man won't be thrilled with him offering the change to Styles, especially since he's still a minor, but he feels he has to ask. He won't feel right unless he does. It's part of what he's always been taught is the right thing to do. "Shoot," Styles says, folding his fingers into Derek's. He's surprisingly relaxed now, since they don't seem to be jumping into a topic he's uncomfortable with, like what had happened the day before. Derek curls his fingers around Styles and turns to face him. "Remember that any answer is fine. You can ask questions, too," he adds, remembering some of their previous conversations. "Do you want to be changed into a werewolf?" Styles' gaze darts around the table, and when nobody seems ready to leap down his throat, he says, "Not really. I mean, I guess there are some circumstances where it might be appropriate, but
It's not something I just want to do. Okay. Derek gives his hand a squeeze. Those circumstances are sort of follow-up questions. But this is important. You can always change your mind. I won't ask again, and Mom won't ask you, or push, or even drop hints. But you can change your mind and ask us at any time. It's on your terms, and never is a perfectly valid option. He's learned enough to know that you have to close all the loopholes, or Stiles will worry about them. Stiles just nods. Okay, yeah, that's good. What circumstances? It's Talia who replies, placing a manila folder on the table. It's all laid out here, she says. But the basic idea is, if your life was in danger and the bite could save you, would you want it? Oh, well, shit, yeah, Stiles says. I'd rather be a werewolf than dead. Derek knows his mother will go through the rest of the basics as they sign the forms, which all four of them will need to sign. But he offers up a bit more information. The medical choices come with a card to put in your wallet, or even to wear if you want. That way emergency rooms know. If you're ever traveling and, God forbid, Mom can't get to you, they'll find a local alpha to help you. Stiles' face scrunches up. Wouldn't that make me part of their pack, if I got bitten by a different alpha? Only in the temporary, until we got to you. You'd still be tied to our pack no matter what, through your bond with me. And the pack you want to be in matters. The alpha that changes you matters too, but it's not the only thing that does. And in a situation like that, the other alpha should give you up willingly. The if he or she doesn't want the ass-kicking of a lifetime is left unspoken. Okay, Stiles chews on his lower lip. Okay, so I'm good with werewolf bites if I'm dying. Initial here, Talia says, handing him a pen and indicating a spot on the paper. Stiles gives the paragraph a quick read. Kind of vague, don't you think? He asks, and Talia frowns at him. I mean, all it says is if death is inevitable, but there's nothing about time frame. I mean, what if I had terminal cancer? Or what if I wasn't going to die, but I was a vegetable? Or like if I had brain damage that rendered me incapable of making my own decisions? What if I was like that guy in Memento? Talia gives him a look. Then she shakes her head a little. Have you ever considered being a lawyer? Bleh, no, Stiles says, his automatic response more vehement than he intended. His father covers a laugh with one hand. He's going to be a cop, not a lawyer, Derek interjects, also a bit amused. Don't worry, Mom, it won't go to waste. Talia purses her lips, but then says, for now, Stiles, just initial, saying that if you are in danger of imminent demise, you want the bite. If you want to draw up a second contract later to deal with the possibilities of vegetables, brain damage, amnesia, catatonia, dissociative fugue, missing limbs, partridges, or pear trees, we can do that when it's not one of my few days off. Stiles smirks at her and ostentatiously scrawls his initials on the page. Talia wordlessly offers the pen to Sheriff Stalinsky so he can initial as well, which he does. Derek wonders if they should include something about bear attacks, but manages to keep his mouth shut. Talia flips the page. We can probably skip the section on income and pack resources since you're still a student. Stiles clears his throat. I do have income, though, he says. I mean... He steals a glance at his father's neutral expression. From doing odd jobs around the neighborhood and stuff. Stiles, I don't think we need to worry about the $10 you earn from mowing your neighbor's lawn, Talia says. The sheriff maintains an impressively flat face as he looks from Talia's mildly dismissive expression to the look on Stiles, which he knows is just going to turn to insulted outrage with the wrong words any second now. I think he's more concerned with the $200-some-odd he earns with each research and term paper he sells online, frequently. He raises his eyebrows at his son, just daring Stiles to say something about how he had thought his father was oblivious to his little side business. Stiles rubs a hand over the back of his head. Yeah, well, there is that. Talia gives Stiles a look. Isn't that illegal? Selling, no. Stiles gives her an innocent smile. Buying, maybe, but not selling. It might be frowned upon in certain academic circles, but... You will not be selling term papers to any member of this family, she informs him. Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that, he agrees. I want them to actually learn stuff and get into college and shit. And when he's in college, he will either stop altogether or be very discreet and never sell a paper to anyone in the same college or any institution affiliated with it, because he's smarter than that. Sheriff Stilinski gives his son a stern look. Right? Right, Stiles says, giving his father a thumbs up. Talia still doesn't look thrilled with it, but she says, fine. The basic rule of thumb is that 50% of your earnings get put back in the pack, and you keep the other half yourself. In return, of course, the pack fund is what pays for utilities, food, etc. But it's also used in case of emergencies, and often to pay for travel if one of the pack members is away for some reason. In your case, however, she crosses a number out and replaces it. You would pay 33% into the fund. That's because you're the den maker, who traditionally contributes less monetarily to compensate for the amount of time they spend taking care of the pack. Tom looks at Derek, who seems to be taking this as a matter of course, and uses that as a partial basis for his own agreement. He knows that Stiles won't be living in his house forever, and now that he and Derek have worked out the majority of their issues, he might not even be able to keep Stiles for the rest of high school. That makes his heart ache a little, or actually a lot, but this isn't the time or place for those thoughts. He nods to Talia and looks at Stiles, seeing the objections bubbling. What? That isn't fair, Stiles says. It's like saying the Denmaker doesn't need to give as much to the pack. Talia pins him down with a stare. Are you saying your time is not valuable? Well, no, but... Then this is how you're compensated for it. I'm not singling you out. If you need me to go get the contract Olivia signed when she joins the pack, I will. It's tradition. It's part of how we show our respect for the Denmaker. Stiles squirms, but then huffs out, fine. Derek makes a small noise to draw attention and says, can we put a delay on that part of the contract? He shouldn't have to contribute until he's paid back everything he put into the pack. Before he knew how things should work, and before Derek hastily modifies so Laura won't get her ear chewed off, before I was aware of that. Talia frowns at both of them. How so? I was kind of buying the groceries for a little while, Stiles says. You were buying all the groceries? Talia asks. Well, not all of them. I mean, I used what you had around the house, and I got a lot of the meat out of your freezer, but... Stiles sees the way Talia is looking at him and sighs. Yeah, I probably spent a couple $1,000 over the course of a month. It was just a misunderstanding, Derek assures his mother, not wanting to get into how he was sure that Stiles had felt he needed to prove himself to the pack. I've got it sorted out, and my family credit card is on file at the stores now, so they know just to charge it when Stiles does the shopping. Talia, who clearly understands what Derek isn't telling her, says to Stiles, "And you are shopping at the stores where Derek's card is on file, yes?" Stiles purses his lips in irritation, but nods and says, yeah. All right. Talia writes on the contract for a few moments, then hands Stiles the pen. Initial there, she says, and he does. Derek gives his mother a quick, grateful look, not just for amending the contract, but for not pushing the issue. There are a few other minor points on the contract where Stiles initials, and his father does as well, and then they get to the end of it. Talia says, remember, Stiles, that this isn't a decision you should make lightly. Joining a wolf pack is... Stiles scrawls his signature while she's talking and then puts the pen down with a thump. Anything else?
He knows, Tom states firmly. He's not trying to be rude, but just to explain that Stiles isn't being rude. He's just very aware and very sure. We talked about it, in as much detail as two humans can, before he signed up for the list the first time. He pulls the contract towards himself and picks up the pen. Talia still doesn't look thrilled, and Stiles is looking at her defiantly. Derek can smell the hint of anger and shame that's drifting off him, but his mother either can't or doesn't recognize the scent, doesn't recognize the fact that to Stiles her comments seemed insulting, that it came off as a way for her to try to talk him out of being in the pack because she didn't want him there. Derek gives Stiles' hand a reassuring squeeze, because there's nothing he can say that doesn't insult someone. Sheriff Stilinski manages to keep his sigh and his opinions about the contract to himself and reaches for the pen, signing on his own line. He and Talia need to have a serious discussion about how to handle his son. Before the moment of tension can last too long, Derek sees an easy way to change the subject. He peers down at the last page of the contract and says, "Your name is what?" Stiles immediately flushes pink. "Stiles. My name is Stiles." Tom scratches at an eyebrow. "No, Stiles is what you choose to go by." He sighs a little. "He's named after his maternal grandfather. Admittedly, it's a little, ethnic." "No, Dad, a little ethnic would be if you guys named me Alexander or Olaf." "That," Stiles says, tapping the contract with the pen, "is not an ethnic name. It's an ethnic tongue twister. It's my own name, and I can't even pronounce it." "That is a lie," his father says, pointing an accusing finger at him, even though it's obvious he's amused. "You can pronounce it perfectly." Stiles just makes a face at him. "And?" Derek prompts. "And Stiles," Stiles replies. "Son," Tom says to Derek, "don't even bother. The only other person who knows what his name even sounds like is Scott, and I'm pretty sure that undying oaths have been sworn about the sharing of this information." Talia signs the contract on the line for the Alpha, then passes it to Derek, who signs in his place. "Welcome to the pack again, now that it's official," she says. Stiles picks at his cuticles. "Thank you again, officially," he replies. Tom eyes the two of them and refrains from shaking his head. "So since we're all conveniently here, I think it's about time we had a talk about a few other things, Stiles." Stiles freezes. What? "You can get the recipe for my French toast later, Dad, because Derek and I have to do a thing. "I don't need your recipe for French toast because you never let me cook, because you know I'll make bacon. And I don't want to hear about whatever thing you feel you and Derek need to do." His look of pain is only half-faked. "Please keep your butt in your seat, okay?" "Fine," Stiles says, sulking. "This morning, Talia and I had a nice chat with your teachers and your principal." Tom points a finger at his son as he appears ready to leap out of his chair. "Stay sitting." Then he takes a deep breath. "When I say nice, I mean I still have a job, because I didn't commit any violence upon them, but we still have some things we need to talk about." Stiles squirms. "You and I do, maybe, but I don't see why anyone else needs to be here." "In this case, Talia isn't here as your alpha or any kind of family. She's here as my lawyer, our lawyer. She's the one who's going to be suing the school if they fail to follow through on any of the things that have been worked out to try to fix what's been done to you. Academically, at least. Socially is a bit harder, but we did talk about that, too." In the moment of quiet that follows, Derek looks over and asks, "Do you want me to leave?" Stiles is cringing a little. "I don't know. How bad are you going to freak out when my dad starts talking about what's been going on at school?" Derek glances over at his mother for a moment, then at Peter's empty place at the table. "Not that badly." "Well, you can stay then." He looks at his father. "Am I in trouble?" he adds, a little hesitantly. "For a few things," Tom says, answering him honestly. cutting class and keeping these things from me are not how you should be handling your problems. They're not smart or effective ways to handle your problems. He holds up his hand to stop any protests that might start spilling out of Style's mouth. But I understand that things have been hard and there are circumstances, so I'm not going to punish you. I just want to talk with you about how you maybe should have handled it and why you handled it the way you did. I knew I should tell you, Styles says, fidgeting, his fingers lacing and unlacing. I mean, I wanted to, but I didn't want you to make a big fuss and get accused of playing favorites, and I didn't want... His gaze darts uncertainly to Derek. I just didn't want to get people in trouble. And at first I guess I thought I could handle it, but it kept getting worse, and I just... It spiraled out of control on you? Tom asks. Yeah, and I thought, even if I told you, it wasn't like there was anything you could do. Sheriff Stilinski closes his eyes for a few moments and reminds himself that his son, for all his brains, is only 17. He's in a position where he feels that any sort of power has been taken from him, and he's far too concerned with his father's ability to get reelected. Just God help us, if there's ever a next time, come to me anyway, and we'll see if there's something I can do. We can try to work it out together, okay? Okay, Styles says, which means there's at least a 50% chance that he will. So, what happened? Are we moving to Canada or what? No, you are going to school on Monday, so you had better do your homework, which your teachers will no longer be losing, and from which now on will be graded appropriately. Tom stops here to see what sort of reaction that gets. Styles goes still for a brief moment, gaze flickering around the table. I'm not suspended? You're not suspended. So I can't spend the next 5 days in Derek's pants? Derek casts his gaze upwards as if praying. Son, Tom says, if you think talking about that is going to make me uncomfortable enough that we won't have to have this discussion, you'd better think twice or even three times about that. Styles makes a face at him, but Talia clears her throat and says, You're not suspended, and most of the detentions have been cleared off your permanent file. Your grades are going to be reassessed by outside teachers. The one concern is gym class, and they've agreed that your self-defense studies with Laura can make up for it. Yeah, I'm clearly not getting out of those, Styles says, shooting Derek a glance that borders on being annoyed. Derek makes a sulky face right back. It's not like I'm enjoying it either. Talia sighs. You will, of course, be expected to attend all your classes from now on. No more cutting. If that's a problem for any reason, you had better let somebody know. Styles opens his mouth like he's going to protest, but then cuts a look at his father and nods. Yeah, okay. Except for Jim, Tom clarifies. That was turned into a study hall. Coach Finstock seemed to think it was rather intelligent of you to make yourself scarce. Huh, yeah, Styles says, rubbing at one of the bruises. Then he frowns and looks at Derek. You're not upset. And I told you not to freak out, but you're, like, not upset at all. And that seems a little weird to me, because yesterday you were all like, I'm going to beat the living daylights out of everyone at your school. Like, seriously, I didn't think you'd calm down until you actually tasted blood. Derek's quiet for a moment, then looks down at the table, running the tip of a very short claw over the surface. I think Mom was being merciful to the school by having this meeting before you signed the contract, but, he shrugs. She's not really big on mercy as a general rule for people that mess with us. So I'm betting that things went about as badly for them as I wanted. And Peter adores you in his own weird Peterish sort of way. And he's not here. What in the hell am I going to do that's going to top that? At this, Peter looks somewhat nervous. What is Peter doing? I mean, he talked once about being a gravedigger. He's not actually going to kill anyone, is he? Peter promised me that he would do no permanent physical damage to anyone, Talia assures him. Oh, Styles relaxes. That's okay, then. So I'm calm because I don't always have to take care of you myself. I just have to know that our pack got it done, and your dad.
He's my pack, Style says. But, you know, thanks.
He directs this mostly at Talia.
You don't need to thank me, Styles, Talia says. You're part of my pack now, and that means I'll protect you.
Styles looks at her and nods, and then his gaze drops.
Okay. I mean, sorry to, be a burden.
Talia opens her mouth to say something, and Derek is sure that it's to reassure Styles that he isn't a burden, or that he's entitled to help, or any number of reasonable things, but he just shakes his head at her a little. Right now, she and Styles aren't arguing, and he'd like to maintain that. Derek will work on this misconception that Styles has. He just needs a little time to figure it out.
Sheriff Stilinski, for his part, reaches out and gives his son a gentle whap upside the head.
For someone so smart, you sure can be an idiot, he says. Now I've got some work to do. You behave yourself, you hear?
Styles gives him a half-hearted salute.
Sir, yes, sir.